Welcome to the Visegrad Insight podcast from Central Europe on Central Europe.
Welcome to the Visegrad Insight podcast. This episode is recorded on Monday, 14th of August, 2023. And I'm joined here by Adam Jasser, and my name is Wojciech Szyberski, to discuss the pressing events of that week.
Hello.
Hi, Adam. As Poland is preparing for the parade that is on the special day, on the 15th of August, an anniversary of the defeat of the Red Army in 1920, and today basically a holiday, a special celebration of the Polish Army, Polish Army Day, and many military gear is going to show up in Warsaw, including the newly purchased equipment, and also to according to the press reports, even there were attempts to repaint some of the F-35s that Poles hoped to borrow from Americans for that occasion. There are also many events happening this week in broadly speaking Central Europe. And I think we could start off by focusing on the visit of President Erdogan in Budapest that has been announced, and we're now expecting it this week. Obviously, this comes in the context of the ratification of Swedish membership in NATO, where both countries are yet to deliver on the parliamentary decision to have Sweden fully in and on board. Adam, what do you think we should make out of this?
Well, the basic explanation is just what you said, that the two countries may want to coordinate their approach to ratifying Sweden's membership in NATO. But clearly there are other issues which sort of suggests Hungary and Turkey may be seeking closer ties. Both countries are taking a slightly different approach to Ukraine's war with Russia. Turkey has been trying to be some kind of a broker. It certainly helped on the grain deal that has now expired and is under question. It also offered all sorts of peace negotiation initiatives. At the same time, Hungary is clearly taking a very skeptical view of Ukraine's effort to defend itself from Russia, and is perceived as the most pro-Russian EU member state. The two countries are also following an authoritarian playbook with state capture, with media control, and with both leaders, Erdogan and Orban, appearing in full control of their countries, undermining independence of institutions, the judiciary, and so on and so forth. So there are some ideological similarities in their political approach.
Well, apart of ideological similarities, there is a general broad, if not global, consensus that neither of the leaders is going to resign. Unless they are resigning, they're not going to be defeated in a normal electoral campaign. This is the extent to which in both countries they have secured their position, controlled the environment, controlled the process. And that, from the point of view of the democratic game, is so difficult for all the other NATO member countries. NATO member countries that have pledged that democracy is the foundation of the alliance, and indeed, because of the defense of democracy, NATO and the security system of NATO even exists. You're right, I think, to point to differences between position of Hungary and Turkey. Turkey has been playing much more important role in the war in Ukraine. That's for one, and then much more ambivalent in the sense of helping Ukraine and at times mediating for peace. And even very recently, we have heard from Mr. Zelensky that Turkey is the country to be able to deliver anything on the grain deal. This is the country to actually bring Mr. Putin back to the negotiating table and have a deal on that issue. So this is from the point of view of Ukraine, an important country with which you can do certain things. On the other hand, again, from Ukrainian partners, even over this weekend, we have heard that Hungary is essentially helping Russia to kill Ukrainian citizens. These were the words of the leader of the European Affairs Committee in the Ukrainian in the Ukrainian Parliament, in the Ukrainian Verkhovna Rada. And of course, that these words were heard loud and bounced against a lot of propaganda and nationalist response from the Ukrainian stakeholders. So I think this also, this, if you want to spot the difference, that this is the one, that you have two countries so close in this state capture terms in inside, but they are also playing a very different role in the situation between Russia and Ukraine.
Lots of question marks before that visit. Meanwhile, in Poland, the election date was finally set for October 15th, and almost immediately the campaign took off with some harsh language and with a clear attempt by the ruling Law and Justice Party to regain the initiative.
There is sort of a summer impasse, indeed. There is decision as we were announcing in previous weekly outlooks and in the podcast edition of the past weeks of President Duda finally setting the date. And this date for set for the 15th of October converges with a papal celebration of Poland, where the Catholic believers celebrate the life and the personality of John Paul II, the Karol Wojtyła, who became the Pope, the first Polish Pope, and whom PIS tries to frame as being a victim of the opposition. They've been trying to set the stage for defense of this great individual in the Polish in front of the Polish elections. So this is one dimension that has been tried, that is being seen and perceived in this election as maybe not the core issue, but is going to be mobilizing for a shrinking population of hardcore believers. And on the other hand, we also have now the date and all four questions of a referendum that is going to take place on the same day. And I think the second part is no less interesting, because on one hand, it clearly points to the practices, electoral practices of countries like China or Hungary, where supposedly, you know, so-called referendums are taking place exactly on the election dates, not because the government is really interested in learning the opinion of the people and then following such a decision with strong legitimate democratic mandate, but they are doing that to manipulate the electoral budgets and also electoral messages in order to mobilize their electorate and then demobilize the opponents. So I think it's worth spending a moment on basically narrating the meaning of the four questions, and why don't we do it one by one? Adam, I think the first one rightly so goes to you.
Yes, the first question is about selling off national assets. Are you for or against? Which is a very strange question, given no one seriously is suggesting selling off the remaining few state-controlled companies most of which are of strategic importance. Interestingly, Law and Justice itself last year sold a leading oil company to Hungarian and Saudi Arabia interests in a controversial deal that the opposition was against, and a lot of business analysts were also critical of. So the question seems to be an attempt to revive fear of mass privatization that was topical among Law and Justice voters in the past, but it's completely divorced from reality.
Well, it might divorce from reality, but at the same time, it has this mobilizing effect, something that we should not undervalue or attribute too less of a value for the special electoral groups that PIS represents. Now, which is the other question that we should, which is the question that I should answer?
Well, there is also a question about the retirement age. Law and Justice came to power in 2015 and reversed the previous government's decision to gradually increase the retirement age to 67. Again, you know, no one is seriously suggesting to raise the retirement age, but Law and Justice puts that on the referendum ballot just to remind everyone where it stands on the issue. Interestingly, in its commitments to the European Union as part of negotiations of the recovery fund, which is still frozen, by the way, for Poland, the government had made a commitment to actually seek an increase in the effective retirement age. So again, a contradiction and a clear attempt just to mobilize its supporters.
Right. So the two other questions that are remaining are more of universal nature, if you consider migration question across the globe. And they're also very specific for the type of regimes and type of ideology represented by PIS. And the question announced by the Prime Minister, because these were four key politicians, as it seems, announcing four questions at the referendum, like day by day, kind of building momentum and really showing how PIS is struggling to bring a vibe and to make the campaign really somehow interesting and evoking emotions, which I think it clearly continuously fails to do. So the third question has been Prime Minister Morawiecki's question: do you support the admittance of thousands of illegal migrants from Middle East and Africa according to the enforced mechanism of relocation that has been enforced by the European bureaucracy? So it's a very technocratic and a very vile and vicious questions at the same time. On one hand, it puts so many things in one box. Of course, there are illegal crossings, but they're not illegal migrants. People are not illegal by every definition that our democracies and foundations of our civilization are built on. And secondly, there is there's misinformation, because the European bureaucracy is clearly not making Poland to admit thousands or even hundreds or even one illegal person who is illegally crossing the borders into European Union in Poland. There is no necessity for this question, because the migration compact, migration pact that has been a joint decision of the European Union with opposition of the Polish government for clearly electoral issues and electoral issues, reasons, does not make Poland obliged to take in any migrants. It actually supports the country for what it has been doing, accepting refugees from the war in Ukraine. So clearly, another attempt to mobilize a hardcore group electorate, but definitely not expands the circle of supporters around this question. And the fourth question comes from Minister of Defense, Mr. Błaszczak, who at the same time this weekend announced a special military task force to defend the border in Belarus, which seems to be very much important for specifically the northeast region of Poland and the region in which PIS has significant numbers of supporters. And the question of the referendum is whether you support the abolishment, the liquidation of the barrier on the border between Poland and Belarus. And that needs another explanation, where barrier probably means a wall that has been built in parts of the border. This is probably the reference the government has in mind, but the ambiguity of this question also does not allow us to say that. So it may very well mean any border, any barrier, and there are many, including natural barriers and the barriers that has been set up just on the border checks. And then there's a regular practice between two neighboring countries not in the Schengen zone. So there is a clear attempt of government in this instance of the fourth question of the referendum also to play on the security element and address again a very specific target group of voters in Poland ahead of this election, simply demonstrating to this core groups that they really care about, the government really wants to show that it cares about those voters while nobody else does. To my mind, they're clearly an attempt to mobilize the core voters rather than to expand. And we should nevertheless not disregard the importance and significance of the referendum, largely because the referendum mechanism allows for additional surplus of resources in a political campaign that takes place exactly in the same time and exactly the same moment. So it eventually means that the government will have better justification for overspending, doubling their resource when it comes to the core electoral race, the general elections on the same day, on the 15th of October. Stay tuned for Visegrad Insight podcast, but also do visit our website. Later this week, there will be a number of texts, including an analysis on the significance of this election from a broader European context.
And now please stay on listening to us. We will be interviewing Piotr Łukasiewicz, a senior analyst at Polityka Insight, about the security situation on Poland's eastern border with Belarus. And we will be talking about the threat from Wagner Group and also about Poland's posture to beef up its armed forces on the eastern flank of NATO. Our special guest today is Piotr Łukasiewicz, analyst at Polityka Insight, a former diplomat, ambassador to Afghanistan, Poland's ambassador to Afghanistan, and an academic. Welcome, Piotr.
Adam, thank you very much for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be with you.
The topic I wanted to raise with you is that we're confused, like everybody else. You know, we're hearing a lot of rhetoric about the escalating military tension along the Belarusian border with Poland and also the Baltic states. There was a lot of noise around the Wagner Group relocation to Belarus, Poland moving troops to the border in response, and then Russia saying it will have to beef up defenses because Poland is planning to invade Belarus, and so on and so forth. And then there was an incident with Belarusian helicopters violating Polish airspace. So it has become very difficult to really get the picture of what is really happening. Can you help us?
Well, I think it's a most difficult question ever, actually, the civilizational question right now. What is happening? What is really happening? So I'm not really, I don't think I will be able to fully explain the reality around us. But jokes aside, in this question, in this topic regarding Polish and Belarusian relations in the recent weeks, it's very important, I think, to distinguish facts from the noise, as you mentioned. And the facts were on the Belarusian side that so-called Wagner units, after the failed Prigozhin coup in Moscow in Russia, were moving to Belarus, apparently for the temporary banishment. To settle down things in Russia, they were kind of expelled to Belarus to spend some time there. And Alexander Lukashenko, the Belarusian dictator, was welcoming them as a yet another tool for pressing his most apparent enemies, which by that he means Poland, he was trying to use this fact that the Wagner was moving to his country to his own benefit. So the fact was that Wagner mercenaries, to use the proper language, were moving to Belarus in the numbers which are still unknown. There were hundreds. There were reports about hundreds of Wagnerites. There were even thousands, 3,000 or 4,000 reported by the Belarusian opposition, which is based in Poland, and from time to time reports from what is happening from this dictatorship. There were a few camps established in the eastern part of Belarus, visible from the satellites, which is most probably these were real camps prepared for some people. We did not learn what actually they were for. And Belarusian propaganda was showing Wagner mercenaries training its own soldiers, Belarusian soldiers, apparently close to the vicinity of the Polish-Belarusian border. On the side of the noise, well, as I was saying, there was a lot of Belarusian propaganda connected with the with this fact. Oh, sorry. Let me go back to the fact part of this answer. Recently, this Belarusian opposition was stating that the Wagnerites are moving out of Belarus.
That they are being forced back to Russia.
Yes. So they are kind of going back, and they are being recruited for the proper Russian armed force. So this is another, let's say, fact, because it was reported by the Belarusian opposition, which credibility is there are a few doubts. There are some doubts about its credibility as well. Again, coming back to the noise part. This was a great propaganda opportunity for the Belarusian regime to press on the Polish side, to create the situation to create the tension on the Polish side, and unfortunately it was met with a lot of political noise on the other side of the border. I mean, on the Polish side of the border, as you know, there is obviously the political campaign, very heated political campaign going on in Poland, connected with the upcoming elections and the referendum. So these moves and these actions or propaganda statements from the Belarusian side were met with our own propaganda noise, and that created yet another example of how the facts of the little importance could transform into great political battle. Why I'm saying this is this was it was little political or military importance, because even if there were, I don't know, 3,000 or 4,000 Wagnerites, which is again I'm sure it was an exaggeration on the Belarusian side. So even if there were hundreds or even thousands, few thousands of this Wagnerites, they were deprived of the heavy equipment, which we know from the aftermath of the coup in Russia. And according to my military background, they were absolutely no match for what is from what Polish armed forces represent on the other side of the border. Of course, so-called hybrid warfare, quite popular recently in the last decade, of course, could be an area where they could be used some form of diverse activities, trying to smuggle through the border. Well, but it's nothing that our border guards or our military could not deal with. So military value of this mercenaries on the Belarusian side were of little importance, but again, it was very quickly overshadowed by the propaganda and political campaign on both sides. So that's my take on the how to discern facts from the noise in this case. And one last thing, because you mentioned this military aircrafts, Belarusian military aircrafts, flying into Polish airspace quite recently. I'm not trying to diminish the importance of this of such an event, but I remember the statement from Polish sides in April 2021 when Polish helicopters actually went into Belarusian airspace, few hundreds of meters, few kilometers maybe, almost the same type of incident that happened 2 weeks ago. And what can I say? These things happen, especially in the border area. This is either a mistake of pilots or even the provocation, deliberate provocation from Belarusian sides. But if this is not connected with some serious attempt, which we can foresee whether Belarusians are preparing for something more serious than accidental fly into Polish airspace, this should be met with a very moderate and very nuanced response rather than this hiking the atmosphere around it.
Right. So you mentioned the political context, the elections on October 15th as a factor in how the Polish government is responding, perhaps exaggerating some of the risk and sort of posturing as a sort of card on security. But simultaneously, we also have this rather surprising change in Poland's attitude to Ukraine itself. You know, Poland belonged to the most ardent supporters of Ukraine in the opening stages of the war, delivering a lot of equipment and taking in more than a million refugees. But in recent months and especially weeks, it seems that that Poland's government has changed the tone, and it looks as almost complete U-turn in its approach to Ukraine. So it's no longer the top advocate of Ukraine. It's actually accusing Ukraine of being ungrateful. What's your reading of this?
Yet again, this is on one side, this is the clash of political interest on Polish side, which is based on the real interests of Polish agricultural sector, which were not resolved since the start of the war. We had like 2 years, well, a year and a half to prepare for a more technical approach to resolve or to predict and resolve such a conflict like this, meaning that Ukrainian grain going to Poland, mostly to Poland, because this is the only safe passage for this most important export commodity of Ukrainian. So we had some time after the initial shock last year. We had some time. Poland had some time to prepare for the next year, for the current year, possible another type of problem like this. And from what I understand, we failed to do so. Government failed to prepare the grain silos and the infrastructure needed for easing such a export of Ukrainian goods, agricultural goods. So this is on our part. Second part of this problem is that we were not quick enough with demanding or requesting European Union assistance in solving this problem. So that created a situation where you have another season for Polish agriculture, and you have, of course, the Ukrainian season of gathering grain from Ukrainian fields in full swing, and this is the situation is that, you know, Poland has no abilities, no capacity to absorb this grain from Ukraine. So on Polish side, this is the kind of a technical infrastructural problem, which is, and the gist of this confrontation is that it is met with survival of Ukraine. And so on Polish side, there is a infrastructure problem, political one to some extent. On the other side, on the Ukrainian side, this is the vital interest of survival of Ukraine, and the confrontation could be quite easily predicted in this. It's an interesting position from the Ukrainian side, why they are reacting like this. Probably why they are not trying to ease the tensions between Ukraine and Poland, probably is that they are calculating that Poland has not very much to offer to them in terms of political support in their plans to join European Union in the future. In terms of weaponry and armaments, besides the fact that Poland is a kind of a staging ground for the logistics that are flowing from the West to Ukraine, Poland has not much to offer in terms of our own weaponry. Maintenance, reconstruction of Ukrainian tanks and so on. This is the quite obvious, but so Poland lost kind of it's a little bit of its importance in the eyes of Ukrainians, but this agricultural confrontation that we can observe right now could be also seen as a kind of a prediction of how it will look like when actually the war is over and Ukraine will try to join the European Union. And this gives me a kind of a pessimistic view on the future Polish-Ukrainian relations. What is going right now, it can be solved. It is very special period of this relation because there is a war going on. But if this will continue into the future peaceful situation and peaceful cooperation between Poland and Ukraine, that gives me a lot of pessimistic assessments of this future relations. Because if this looks like this, if this looks like we are Poland and Ukraine bound to, you know, going into very confrontational situation in the future setup, political and in political setup in this part of Europe, it's a quite pessimistic situation that we will find ourselves in.
Thank you very much for this assessment, for this feedback, for this insight. I hope things will not get as bad as we both seem to predict, for the sake of Ukraine and for the sake of Poland.
Thank you very much, Adam. Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me.